like support black companies.
Hey, I appreciate you coming on, brother. Shut up, man. He snuck
those,
up.
Those customs, bro.
Huh?
Those customs.
What up, you know, little Jordan, you know what I mean?
What's up, bro?
Jordan's, you know what I'm saying? Jordan's kind of helped me out a little bit.
You know, man, when you a special guy, you a Jordan guy?
I am.
Oh, yeah.
Brand you know, Jordan, you know what I mean?
They get all the joints like we don't get.
So that's straight from Jordan like that? Or?
Yeah, they sent these, for sure.
God, that's lovely.
I had a Nike deal.
Open them up in the box.
That's a different deal. Lamar Woodley was a Jordan guy.
Oh, yeah.
And he said that, like, monthly, he just get a shipment at the house of...
It's like quarterly.
They just quarterly, do, okay.
A big boxes.
A lot of merch.
A lot of merch, shoes. Sometimes it's, like, we get J's, like, maybe 3 months in advance.
How they just drop a new pair, but my six rings is
terrible.
They just
dropped some cool grays on Nike.
See?
Bobby is a Jordan guy, and he wouldn't wear six rings.
They kill me about my six rings.
Six rings.
This man, a Jordan guy, doesn't even know what a six rings Jordan is.
I'm just kidding.
Because you know, when they send them, when they send those to Bobby's house, he sends them back.
They made me throw out all my, well, give away all my six rings. They got on me so bad. Had everybody on me about my six rings.
Whenever they start like creating and melding different Jordans together, that's the ones you don't want.
You know what, them Fusions?
That's your favorites?
I thought they were hard until, they were on me for about 4 or 5 episodes on me about this.
Bobby, he wear mids. Like he's.
I didn't know mids wasn't cool. They half the price.
Okay. Hey, look, I'm on your team.
Appreciate you, brother.
Hold up. Limitless. Take a stomach cap, pinning it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling, got me up. On the mission, got me up. Knowing me, I got the key. Only vision I can trust, trust, limitless. Take a stomach cap, pinning it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling, got me up. On the mission, got me up. Knowing me, I got the key.
Welcome to the Pivot, Bobby, man. It's exciting to have you, especially still during football season. So I know this is an incredibly tough time for you to do it because this is normally when you guys get to rest and sort of recuperate. You're a West Coast guy, so to come way out here to the East Coast, we appreciate you. Freddie T, my dog Chan, I'm RC. Welcome to the Pivot. Thank you guys for tapping in. And I said it to you when we talked earlier. Truly, I believe when you talk about the Seattle Seahawks and the Legion of Boom, the first name that should be mentioned is Bobby Wagner. I think what was amazing about that era of that team was y'all had so many leaders, right? And so many of the top players at their position. But to me, it all started with you.
I appreciate that.
You know, I think it's cool to get an opportunity to see sort of where all of that grows. I say all that to say I want to talk about being in Los Angeles, though.
Okay.
And not about playing for the Rams and being a guy that's from there on game day, having an opportunity to drive past Inglewood Park Cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
And always remembering that she lives there is what you said, not lived. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about just what your mother meant to you and sort of what that year was like knowing that you take that drive every day.
It meant the world to me. I remember the first time when I was in Seattle and we played for the first time at that arena. And I didn't realize how close it was. I kind of just put it into my phone just to see what the distance was. And it was like maybe 0.5 miles or something like that. And so, you know, I think she's always, you know what I'm saying, present in me. And so be able to come there and I always try to like visit before I go into the season. So that season was different because I got a chance to, like you said, I drove by every single day. So I stopped there often. I spent a lot of time there, especially when the season wasn't going the way we planned it. I might have stopped there a little bit more often, but she was such an intricate part in my success, and I try to give her flowers as much as I can.
Like you said, having opportunities to go there more, or you know, like you said, you visit before the season. You know, I know for me, whenever I do, and my mom's still here, but whenever I do lose a loved one, and I am standing in front of their gravesite, like I have a conversation,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I share things that I'd want to share with them if they were still here. That normally goes in the same vein of the conversations we had when they were alive. What are some of those conversations you share when you get an opportunity to visit?
I think it's kind of like you said, it's just a normal conversation. It's almost like their spirit is present. You know, just the physical part of them is not there. Yeah. And so it's just conversations, big and small, like issues or just having a conversation, because it's a voice that you don't get to hear anymore. But you remember, you know, what the responses would be like, you know, if you know, you were able to have that conversation. So it's pretty much anything. You know, she was my best friend, and meant the world to me. So it's like funny, when I did go back, I was trying to find my old cell phone so I could charge it and listen to some of the voicemails that she left before. And so it's a thing. I don't think, you know, it ever goes away to an extent, but you try to be a bright extension of what their legacy is.
I love that.
Was that your one of the toughest time to that going through that?
For sure. That was definitely my toughest time, just because I was, I think I was like 18. So I was living in California. Then I got a scholarship to Utah State. So I go to Utah State. I've never been anywhere near snow before. never even knew what it looked like. All I saw was from cartoons and movies. And then that first year, you know, you get that phone call that, you know, she had an accident and you need to come down here quick. You know, it was definitely one of the toughest things I had to deal with, but I think it also made me stronger.
Your journey to Utah State, you were a two-star recruit.
That's what they said.
That's what they said. What was your motivation, like, just coming up, your upbringing? What inspired you to get into football, and what became your ultimate motivation?
I think the biggest thing was I just wanted to get out of the situation that I was in, and I wanted to, you know, put food on my family's table and things of that nature. So that was, like, I didn't know about stars until I got to Utah State. I didn't even know I was a two-star or anything. And so I didn't really care about that. I was just trying to make it out. The motivation, honestly, was conversations that I had with my mom. Like, I remember I picked up a job just because I wanted to have money of my own. I didn't want to depend on my parents. And it was tough balancing going to the job and football, and then I end up getting fired from the job because I chose football one day over the job. And then, you know, we had this conversation where she was just like, you know, why are you working? And I was like, because I need money. And then she kind of just said, I got you. Just focus on this. And so my mind was like, okay, like, she's taking care of me. I want to be in a position where I can return that favor.
You said the situation that you were in, you wanted to sort of change that. Could you go deeper? Like, could you expound on that and kind of give us a visual?
I just was like, I was tired of like not having any money. I was tired of being dependent on other people. Growing up, I always knew I felt different, but I always wanted to have my own. And unfortunately, because of my age at the time, I couldn't work. And so the moment I was able to work, I wanted to kind of get from underneath my parents and not have to rely on them financially. And, you know, just I didn't want to ask for anything. I wanted to be able to provide for myself. And I just wanted to get away with that. And then I was fortunate enough to have both my parents, but I saw a lot of my friends, you know, didn't even have a mother or a father. You know what I'm saying? So I saw the way that they were taking care of their mothers, the ways they was doing it, and I wanted to do it in a brighter spot.
I was messing with you earlier, and I was like, hey, man, is your name Robert? And you told me an interesting tidbit about your father's name, your name, and your brother. Can you, one, tell us all of their names, and how the hell does that happen? Why? How did they come up with that?
That's not a question for me. But my name's Bobby. My brother's name's Robert, and my dad's name's Bobby. My dad's name is Bobby Joe. I'm Bobby Joseph, and then throw my brother in there, he's like Robert Deshaun, so he went.
But most times, dudes who we call Bobby, their real name is Robert. So your pop's real name is Bobby, and your real name is Bobby, obviously.
Yeah.
And so he was just like, well, since Bobby is short for Robert, I can name my youngest son Robert, and not everybody got the same name?
You know what's funny, though? I never even thought that was a thing until I got to, like, high school, and the teacher kept saying Robert Wagner, I wouldn't respond. And then, like, she looked at me like, why are you not responding? I'm like, because that's not my name. My name is Bobby. She's like, I'm pretty sure it's Robert on your birth certificate. And I'm like, it's not. It's Bobby on my birth certificate. I haven't seen my birth certificate, but I know it's not that because my brother's name's Robert. So I don't know what the thought process was. But, yeah, when I was younger, I used to get offended because I thought people were calling me by a different name. But now I realize as I got older, it was actually short for Robert, but it don't make no sense because Bobby is five letters and Robert is more than five letters, so I don't see the shortness.
I can speak on this because it's really just some country shit. Because I named my first son Randolph Channing Crowder after myself, but okay. Then I had a second son, but Randolph is going in his name. So he's Chaz Lee Randolph Crowder. Okay. So it's really just country shit. You want to keep your lineage going, your name going. I can answer it. We can holler at your daddy, but I think I know the answer.
I'll ask him. I don't know if that's going to be the answer.
So his pop's name is, because his name is Randolph. Uh-huh. Yeah. Right? His pop's name is
Randolph. So I'm junior. Okay. And I got a third. But now we three Randolphs. I can't leave my baby out of Randolph. That's just a 100%. Prestigious name. So I had to throw Randolph on him, too.
Somehow, some way.
I'll ask
and I'll get back to y'all.
You mentioned Utah State. And you going to school there is one of those things that I think in the future will become sort of a trivia question, mm-hmm. right? When you go into the Hall of Fame, when they put up all your All-Pros and your Pro Bowls and Super Bowl champions, they're going to be like, guess the player school. And people are going to be like, USC, right? Because you're from California. They're going to say all of these bigger schools, but you went to Utah State, you become a star there, you're drafted in the early rounds. What was the experience like acclimating to school there? Because it's a different culture. It's obviously a different climate. Mm-hmm. But how were you able to acclimate to now being away from home, where you did have both parents, where not everyone has that, to being in a spot by yourself amongst a lot of people who aren't really like you?
I think it was an adjustment for sure. I think the weather was the toughest thing for me because it was, you know, 0 degrees or something like that. I have never even touched that in California whatsoever. So to me, the weather was different. There was different religion mm-hmm. was there. The religious, I've never heard of the religion that everybody practiced down there. And then obviously the demographic was different.
Yeah.
But looking at it now, I think it kind of made me better because, you know, I'm coming in, I was 17 turning 18, mm-hmm. but the people I was playing against was like 21, 22, 23, because they were all going on missions.
Okay.
And so their freshman year was like 21 versus mine was 18. So I'm playing against people much older than me and gaining that experience in a different way that I might not have going to the regular schools.
So you played tight end in high school too.
I did.
Whose decision was it to make you full-time linebacker once you got to Utah State?
I think it was a combination between mines and some of my coaches, but honestly, it was more so I would get so frustrated in high school because the quarterback wouldn't throw me the ball. And so I remember going to practice one day and I was just like, all right, I'm just gonna try just one hand every ball at practice just so like I'm good, throw me the ball. And so I got frustrated that like my success relied on this guy getting me the ball versus playing linebacker. My effort was all on me. I can get to the ball or I can get my hands on the ball just by my effort. And so it was more so just wanting to control my fate a little bit more. And I feel like linebacker, you could do that.
You went to Utah State, and this is going to be a question when you go in the Hall of Fame. It's going to be one of those trivia questions. Now that you know ball, why did you have to go to Utah State? Were you a late developer? You know, could you not? Like, it's a reason you went.
He just said he couldn't get open at tight end. So many words, he was like, I couldn't really create separation.
We're going to look at these cameras, and the playback's going to be crazy because how you flip that up is nuts. Which is funny because I met Pete Carroll my junior year. He was recruiting one of my friends, Omar Bolden, running back. And he just thought I wasn't big enough. And so coming to the senior year, you know, you try to put on a little bit of weight and all these different things, but still nothing. And Utah State was my only offer. And then fast forward, the how I got the Utah State offer, I didn't even know until we won the Super Bowl, where my coach, you know, my high school coach tells me to, you know, come talk to the kids and stuff like that. So I come down there, and he tells me about this Stanford story. And I'm the Stanford story I always thought was in high school, you know, you have the TA class where you don't really have to go. I had it first period. So basically, you get to sleep. And so I'm asleep like I normally sleep. And I wake up to, you know, like 300 calls, maybe 200 text messages. And my coach was trying to get me to come up in the school because Stanford had came to visit and they wanted to talk to me. So I got dressed as fast as I can. I went, got there. But by the time I got there, they were gone. And he was upset. Like, he was pissed that I wasn't at school. And so I'm thinking it's that. And later on, when I'm at this event, he tell me the real story, which I didn't know, was he was at this coaching convention. And he was sitting at this table, and I think Jim Harbaugh, who's the Stanford coach, he was talking to him about linebackers. And he was like, hey, I got this linebacker. You should come get him, blah, 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 blah. He's like, no, I'm good. We're good at linebacker. And so I guess he left from that spot and walked over to the Utah State guy and said, hey, that guy over there is about to offer my guy if you don't get on it. So Utah State offered me because they thought Stanford was about to offer me. And that's what.
Man, you should have hugged your coach so tight.
100%, but I didn't know that story. So when he told me, because I didn't want to go at first because I didn't want to go to Utah. And so I remember being in a room and I told him, like, man, I don't got any other offers. Like, we can't get something else. And I remember how mad he was and how he stormed out the room. And I didn't understand why he was so upset until probably like 10 years later.
Because you was ungrateful.
That's a way to look at it.
He pulled the old the Drew Rosenhaus move.
Something like
with
that.
With Willis McGahee on draft day. He said,
with Buffalo.
Yeah, with Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
He told him, just act like you're on the phone. You know, and they pretend to call each other as if he was going to be drafted next because teams watch
live feed.
The live feed. So Buffalo was like, nah, we got to get in there. And they wanted him. They ended up picking him. But I want to ask you, you said Pete Carroll came to recruit Omar Bolden.
Yeah.
What were the conversations like between you and Pete once once he became your coach with Seattle?
Well, the first time I saw him after all them years, I definitely brought that up, how he passed up on me in high school. But, I mean, he got it right. And so
yeah, he did.
It was just cool being around him. I obviously, growing up in California, you saw all the success they had at SC. You know, they were coming off a decent season the year before, and he was just always a fun, charismatic guy, like wanted to play around. Like when I came into the league, I had this perception of like it was going to be serious, strict, no play. If you don't do your job, you're getting cut type situation. And when we got there, it was the first meeting, it's loud music. Then they turn the loud music off. Then it's, you know, basketball competitions. And I'm just like, this can't be the NFL. Like, this is college. We did this in college. And it just worked perfect for our group because we had a lot of young guys. I believe I was like 21, 22. KJ was 22, give or take. Cam, Sherm, Earl, those guys were probably around 23. We was all the same age. And so we weren't too far removed from college, so we just fit right in with what he was trying to do.
You'll never hear anybody say anything bad about Coach Carroll. You know, he learned from being an old Patriots coach, going down to college, then coming back to the league. He understood what environment was about. You know, and all of the guys that I know that have played for him wouldn't want to trade him in as a coach for anything in the world. He'll always be a legendary coach in my eyes, and I've only met him once. But according to all the other guys, like, they wouldn't want to, you know, have anyone else coach them ever.
I mean, I can see that because, you know, I think what Pete did was he brought the best out of you, whatever that was. Like, he never wanted you to change who you were. He wants you to be who you were, but he wants you to be the best version of yourself. And so if he was loud, be the best loud person that he's ever seen. If he was quiet, if he was focused, if he was whatever, like, he wanted you to be that best person. I think that's why he brought the best out of everybody. And so I would say I was fortunate to be able to play with him for all those years.
The play on the field of the Legion of Boom, you mentioned some of those names, the Cams, the KJs, and all of you guys was something we just all enjoyed, right? We felt like, I remember being at the Pro Bowl with, that was the year, I think, Brandon Browner had made it, I think just before you. Brandon Browner made it. It was Earl's year there, and they were just saying, like, we're going to be the next defense. Because at that time, the Pittsburgh Steelers were. Right. And they were like, we're going to be the next. And then they add you. What was just the environment of competition like? What was the environment of work like during the time that your defense was the Legion of Boom? Because not only did you guys have great players, y'all had characters. And y'all had, like, monumental moments that didn't involve football, whether it was, you know, whether it was Sherm or Earl, Cam, you know, Marshawn. Just what was that run like for you just being with those people?
I think being in it, you didn't appreciate what was going on because you thought it was going to last forever. And even, you know, when we got to the point where we had to get paid and things of that nature, we was able to work it out. So we extended it, you know, even longer than what people, you know, had said. The environment, though, was crazy. Like, everybody's coming to be the best. Like, I wanted to be the best linebacker. Earl wanted to be the best safety. Cam wanted to be the best safety. Mike B wanted to be the best. Marshawn wanted to be the best. And so when you're going out there and you're practicing against people that want to be the best, they bring the best out of you. And so it was a fun environment. And like you said, we had a bunch of characters. So, you know, the conversations were crazy. Obviously, the practice was crazy. The constant fights that we probably got in early on was crazy. But it was expected. And, you know, I think it was all out of love. You know, so anytime you got into it with somebody you knew, it was because they wanted you. You said that you wanted to be the best.
Yeah.
And maybe that day you wasn't acting like the best, or you weren't pursuing yourself or pushing yourself to be the best. And so you knew it was out of love. And so when we got in those tough moments in the game, people knew how to push and get the best out of one another. And it was like the perfect group for that time.
When the snap goes over Peyton Manning's head.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
And it's the Super Bowl. Did y'all know then it was over?
Nah, we knew going into the week before. We knew we was going to win going into the week.
Yeah, like, there's winning a football game, Bobby, and then there's, like, barely even playing a football game. Because it wasn't hard for y'all that day. There's no way you're going against Peyton Manning, who's had an MVP season, and you're walking into the stadium or practicing that week. So me and you've been to Super Bowls. They haven't. So we're going to turn this way and just have this conversation together.
That's kind of crazy, but
yeah, cool.
So, disrespectful, ain't it? It's just crazy. Disrespectful.
Yeah, you know. So, you know.
Yeah, you know, like, I know.
Y'all let that happen.
You know, like, I know what that week is like. Going into the game, y'all knew y'all would win.
Yeah, because we was in New York, and, you know, we got out there the week before, and you see the team. Obviously, the team's not far from where you at. So when you're going out different places and stuff, you see them, and we the way they was carrying themselves that week, we just knew they weren't focused. They wasn't as focused as we were.
Mm-hmm.
They was more interested in all the other stuff that was going on, like the events. Like, I mean, a couple of those guys had events, you know, leading up into the week. And we just wasn't on that. We was there to win. And so we may have went to a basketball game. If that, we just didn't feel like, you know, they was as focused as we were.
It's a business trip for y'all.
I remember the week before, obviously, before we go out there, I've been watching the film, and, you know, from watching the film, we felt like if we all did our jobs, it was going to be good. But then when we saw how they was, you know, kind of moving around during that week, we knew that the moment we get out there, we was going to win. And then when the ball went over the head, it was like, this is what we was talking about. Like, that's not happening if you focus. Like, it was over.
It's one thing being good, being the top defense. Y'all were feared. Like, did y'all know and embrace that? Like, y'all were feared. People were going on the field looking out like, damn, if B-Wag hit me, it might be over for me.
We were very confident. And you could say, too, like, if you looked at our defense, we didn't run too much crazy stuff at you. Like, you knew we were probably 90% cover three.
Mm-hmm.
And we just ran every variation of cover three that you possibly knew. So you knew where we were going to be at. It's just you had to make the play. And we felt confidently that we were going to make the play more times than not than you were going to make the play. And so it was more of a thing like, who's going to make it this week? Like, you going to be it, Sherm, or is it going to be me? Is it going to be Cam? Like, we just knew that somebody's going to make a play, and it was a competition on who made the play first.
And can, because it's called the Legion of Boom, can that ever happen again? Because in this day and age of football, I don't know if that defense is as good because everybody's getting fined.
Cam for sure getting fined.
Yes, he is.
Cam getting fined. Sherm might be getting fined, but because what he said, not because necessarily what he did. Earl probably get fined. We'll get fined, but we adapt. I think we was a group that could adapt.
So that you done it.
Yeah, about to say.
You know what I mean? So I think we could do it.
Was it tough for you to do? Because you can't say certain things. Headhunter, and kill the head, the body. You can't say old style football stuff like that. But I've watched you. I love linebacker play. What have you done to not get those fines? Because you still knock the hell out of people, but you ain't giving them all your money back either.
I just always felt like I try to hit with my shoulders. I feel like I work out my shoulders so much, why I hit with my face? And so to me, it's just practicing on the target. I never really, like growing up, when we was coming into the game, they was teaching hit with your head. And I'm just like, well, you're not walking away from the game.
Mm-hmm.
With your head, like you're walking away from the game, like kind of messed up. So I don't want to do that.
Oh.
And, you know.
Shoulders is this wide, right. Too, though.
We didn't need that disclaimer.
I work out. You know what I mean? I work out.
His shoulders this wide,
I work
though.
Out.
I want to state something for the record. He said, everybody feared y'all. I used to watch the games on my couch. I wanted some of that action. So I ain't fear y'all, but I wasn't there.
I feel it. I don't think you would have had that many yards, though.
See what I'm saying?
You wouldn't have had that many yards, for sure.
I wasn't 63. I'm not 63. You like to talk about my age, huh? Yeah, let's go one-on-one right here. Nah, I used to sit on the couch like, damn, they look so good out there. But that's what you want, like the Pittsburgh Steelers. Teams that bring out the best in you. And we just talked last week on our three-man show where I said I don't have many moments where I miss the game. You guys were so good that I wanted to get out there like, damn, I can. But I knew I couldn't. Yeah. But in my mind, I felt like it would have been nice for that challenge, man. Because y'all, down in history, the 2000 Ravens, the 02 Bucks, you guys, the Steelers, 85 Bears. It's not that many great defenses.
Yeah.
When you get a nickname, you know it's legendary. Steel Curtain.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You guys, just fucking legendary.
I think the nickname was more though DBs though, to be honest. I think over time it became
the tired
everybody. But at first I feel like it was more so Sherm, Cam, Earl, BB, or you know, whomever was the second next corner. And so it took everybody else kind of a minute to kind of embrace that because it was more of the secondary, you know, when you heard Legion of Boom, you thought of that secondary. And so, in essence, it could have motivated the rest of the group, too, that, you know, you wanted to kind of make a name for yourself. But I think, in a way, it was all positive.
I am a running back. I never went into the game thinking about the secondary.
You didn't play Cam Chancellor, though. Cam Chancellor come in the box.
I played Troy Polamalu.
He not Cam. I play, no disrespect to Cam at all. I mean, I to Troy.
And no, I love Cam's game. And I know he knocked out plenty of guys.
It's not even that. It's Cam was 6'1", 240. He played in the box majority of the time. Like, he was just different. It wasn't like most safeties not coming in the box like a linebacker.
Right.
Like he was. And so I just think that he had a different aspect to the game.
I know Vernon Davis has to hate him.
Yeah.
Boy, he used to give Vernon Davis the blues, boy.
This was a time I just wanted
Cam
to give
was
you.
Was crazy.
I wanted to give you your flowers.
I appreciate it.
Even with that, you could hear Bobby Wagner, and that's kind of what made me stand up because I knew what you brought to the table. And
Monster.
Even a guy who was considered a two-star, you know, going second round, you're a 10-time All-Pro. That doesn't happen. I forget how many Pro Bowls you have. You had over 100 tackles per season for 12 straight seasons. Every year you've been in the game, which is crazy.
That's dumb. Shit.
You know, and you had a chip on your shoulder when you left Seattle to go to L.A., come back to Seattle just to show them that you still can do it, and you did it, earning a Pro Bowl. So even going back to those days when I thought I can hop off my couch, you that same player. Yeah. And that's been since, what was that, the 15 season?
He's a baller, man.
So
before that.
I just want to give you a flower.
I appreciate
it. I ain't think about them not disrespecting them, but I know what a – I know where the shit come from on the defense.
Channing would always tell us about practicing with Ronnie Brown and Ricky Williams. And he played with Junior Seau. And he said Junior Seau, man, would try to fit up Ricky Williams at practice. Ricky was running too hard. He'd throw his helmet. He'd get mad, get off the field. Did you ever have any of those sorts of battles with Marshawn? Because we would always just say offensively and defensively, iron sharpens iron.
Yeah.
Right. When we were in training camp, like I wanted the offense to try to score. I wanted them to go hard because I wanted to be able to believe in them. As a backer, having an opportunity to see Marshawn, you know, daily in training camp, what were those experiences like?
Marshawn helped my game so much, especially as a rookie and my second year as well, because oftentimes when you think of Marshawn, you think of, you know, him running everybody over, but he's also really good at setting up his blocks. And so I just remember being at practice and thinking I had him, and then he would disappear and he'd be gone. And so, you know, I would go over to him, I'll ask him, like what you saw on that? And he would just tell me, like, the way I stacked my alignment, the way the offensive line was flowing, he just, like, set me up into the gap, and then he knew where the hole was going to be, you know, after he did that. And I was just like, dang, like, I didn't realize anybody thought like that from the other side. Like, I didn't think that they was reading the way that we were reading. And so, you know, I felt like it started allow me to set up blocks too, where I would make you think the hole was open and then I would meet you there. And so, you know, he helped me out a lot. Just, that was the battle. It was like more like a chess piece. It wasn't more so physicality. It was more so like, you know, all right, I'm not going to let him beat me with one of these jump cuts today. And I'm not going to let him set me up. I'm going to see if I can set him up today.
Why didn't you tell Coach to give him the ball then?
Hey, that's above my pay grade, brother. You know what I'm saying?
That's
year two, right? Still trying to figure it out. Not going to walk up to Pete and tell him that. But everybody in the building knows.
When you are on the sideline, like the best visual from the Malcolm Butler interception is Sherm's face.
Right.
Like, Sherm was in between disbelief and distraught, so he had the ugly cry face with no tears.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And
they show it all the time.
It's a meme.
It's a meme.
I use it sometimes.
And when you use it, do you still feel it?
Send it to Sherm sometimes. If Sherm texted me and he'd say something crazy, and I'm in disbelief of what he said, I send him that.
When that happens, though, bro, because you know, you have the ball that tips and you catch it, you put yourself in position to score. Malcolm Butler, honestly, too, I think everybody focuses on Marshawn not getting it. It was actually just a hell of a play.
Right.
Two by Malcolm Butler. You have to be thinking to yourself, oh, this is number two. You know, we're going to win this game. When that moment happens, what's your initial thought?
It was so much that led up to that moment that, you know, the cursed catch, you know, it was a bunch of plays that led to that moment. So by the time we got there, you know, you just think like, man, this has happened so many times throughout this season. Even if you look at the last game, it's, you know, we threw like 5 interceptions and, or we had 5 turnovers and we weren't supposed to win. And they do a onside kick. The dude doesn't block it right. We get the ball. Then, you know,
and that
Russ
was Green Bay.
Yep. And then, you know, Russ throws the pass, touchdown. So it was just like, oh, here we go again. We about to win. And then when they don't get it, honestly, if I remember, I looked directly at Marshawn. Cause I feel like a lot of the reaction to the situation was based off of how he felt. You know what I mean? And he kind of was just like, you know, he kind of just like, oh, I seen this coming. And he already, to an extent, had already moved past it to an extent by the time we got in the locker room. So the initial, it was like shock, like, dang, I can't believe, like, we were that close. And then I think right after, you know, they come out, they knee, I think we get in a fight. before the thing. So then it turns into that. It's like, all right, let's not get suspended for the next season. And it was just tough. It was a tough one to overcome. I still feel like we never fully recovered. But I don't think that was the thing that kind of took its toll on us.
What was the thing that took its toll?
I think it was the game before. I think defense, you know, we're going up against Aaron Rodgers. And we started in the red zone maybe like the first four or five drives. They had a couple field goals. I think Sherm had a couple picks that game. And I just remember going into the team meeting room the next day, and there was a lot of praise for the offense and about how resilient they were. And then there was defense need to be better. And, you know, like you said, we have a lot of alpha males in that room. And a lot of those guys didn't take too kindly of that from an accountability standpoint.
How much did that have to do with the quarterback of the team?
I'm pretty sure that played a part in it, for sure.
Did he really have his office?
Did he have offense with us?
An office in the facility.
He didn't have an offense.
Okay, because that was a story. It was when talking about Russ, right?
Yeah.
When Russ went to Denver, he had an office in Seattle where he was just above the rest of the team.
He didn't have an office in Seattle. He maybe had a space where, you know, he took care of his body or did some work. You know, he had a PT that he worked with, but it wasn't an office. And it was kind of out of the way. So you wouldn't even, it was like a room that was unused. Nobody even thought of that room. And so we didn't think of it as nothing. We just looked at it as he was using that space to get ready for the game, just like everybody else.
You know, you talk about taking a toll as a, you know, we had a really good defense too. And sometimes we felt like offense didn't necessarily pull its weight. And there was the looking at the quarterback and looking at the offense like, okay, man, we win in games 11 to 10, mm-hmm. right? We're winning games 6-3. You know, like at some point, you're going to have our backs. How much did that ever become an issue in Seattle during the time of the height of that defense? You know, were there ever conversations of like, man, if the offense does get to this point, we could be this. Or if they were already there, we'd already be this. Or did you guys just look at it like, man, look, if they don't score, they don't win?
I think that was more of our thought process. Because we were wanting to be a really, really great defense. And you watch all of the defense that we've talked about, and if you even listen to some of the sound bites that you have from the Ravens, they'd be like, all we need is 3 points. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't need the offense to score that many points. So it was more of a mentality thing. We didn't really focus on what they were doing. We wanted to make sure that the other team didn't score points. And how can we be the reason why we won the game? And so we wasn't worried about, like, them pulling their weight or them doing these different things. It was just put us in a position where we can make plays. And we're going to make those plays.
Did you have to mourn the end of that era? The Cam Chancellor is gone. Earl Thomas is gone. Richard Sherman is gone. Mike B is gone. KJ eventually leaves. It's like you are like Benjamin Button, right? Like, if y'all know if you've ever seen the movie. But obviously, Benjamin Button was aging backwards. So not even like Benjamin Button. You're like the guy on the Green Mile. Right on the Green Mile, he gets touched by John Coffey, like to drink. Not spelled the same. And so he lives longer than everybody else. He's watched his kids go. Yeah. He's lost all of his friends, right? And he says, this is curse for letting one of God's great creations or God's miracle die. You came a little bit later than some of the people, so you had to watch them all go. And though you were still playing at the height of your game, the defense wasn't as good. You didn't have all the same players. The team wasn't winning the way that they used to. And I know too, like when you become a part of, and they've been around us, the Steelers, when you become a part of something like so great, so monumental, and you accomplish certain things, you grow a different attachment to those people. And to watch them all leave, and it's like, damn, I'm still here. You know, even with all those people around you, you had to be like that Will Smith picture on the last episode, you know what I'm saying, looking around with your hands in your pocket, and that whole empty,
yeah.
What was it like, man, as the pieces started to go and change?
I would say it kind of happened really fast. You know what I mean? Like, it started and then it happened really fast. Like, you watch, you know, I think maybe Cam got hurt first, and you watch Sherm get hurt, and then Earl had his stuff going on. You had all these different things, and I was just like, all right, well, in your mind when they get hurt, in your mind when they have these things, you all right, well, they're just gonna heal up and they're gonna be back. You know, a couple of those guys had basically career-ending injuries, mm-hmm. so they weren't coming back. You know, another guy had reached the end of his contract and, you know, went somewhere else. Same thing with another guy. And so you look at that and you're just like, wow, like, I don't think I appreciated that time the way I probably should have when we were in the moment. But I think that being said, like, you have conversations, you know, with these guys all the time. And, you know, you like, hey, how long you want to play? You know, some guys were saying 10. Some guys were saying, you know, just to the second contract. And I always had a goal of getting to 10 and then figuring it out, but wanting to ultimately get to, like, somewhere in the 15 range. Mm. And so, to me, I'm like, I knew at some point that day was going to come, because even from our goals were different. I wanted to play longer than they might have wanted to play. It's just, I think.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The window that they wanted to play got cut shorter than they expected. So it was more of a, like, after they left, I realized that I needed to appreciate my teammates more, because you never knew how long you was going to be able to play with them.
You know, and part of that is continuing to build who you are away from the sport. And I saw an interesting piece on you about Fast 54.
Mm-hmm.
Can you sort of explain the acronym and why that's so important to you?
I think that is basically a comic book that I created. Like we talked about, like, but my mom, like, I always try to find different ways to kind of honor her or kind of, you know, I understand her story and what she went through. And I'm pretty sure there's other people that's, you know, gone through the same thing. And so FAST 54 was just like an acronym based off of the signs of stroke, where we wanted to, it's kind of a serious subject, but we want to figure out a way to educate people, because when she had the stroke, like, there was no, for me at least, there was no information out there. You didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. The only thing you did was call 911, but you didn't know what was happening. Mm-hmm. You know, we wanted to create this comic book based off of a action hero, but it's not a hero that saves the day. And so that's kind of what we wanted to paint in this comic book, that you don't have to be a hero to save lives. And so that was just our way of coming up with something fun that any age can relate to, whether it's somebody young that loves comics or loves superheroes, or somebody who's older that remembers their first comic book that they had. It's basically a story to try to shed some light on people that suffer stroke and raise some money and awareness and, you know, trying to turn something that wasn't good into good.
I mean, this is the time of year. You saw it last week. It was cold, right? That's playoff football. Our partners at DraftKings, they still the same, though. They don't change when the moment gets heated, right? They ain't doing what Dallas did. So any new customer that signs up right now for DraftKings, you place a $5 bet, you use the promo code DEFENSE, instantly $200 in bonus bets.
And right now you get a no-sweat bet, bro. You get a bet. If that bet doesn't hit, you get a bonus bet on top of that. You know they're going to watch out for you. Hey, y'all know I love the same game parlays. You know I'm hitting on the overs. Same game. The receiving yards and all that. And you give yourself a chance to win even more bread.
I love those same game parlays. Look, all you need is this device and just go and create your own account on DraftKings Sportsbook. And if it's not in your state, don't worry about it. We still got DraftKings Daily Fantasy. Give you an opportunity to get in the game. Pivot.
Hey, use the promo code
DEFENSE.
Any new customer placing a $5 bet instantly gets $200 in bonus bets.
B, let's pivot off the pitch for
no
a little
pun
bit.
Intended.
People know everything that you've done on the field, or at least after seeing this, they will know. but off the field, like your endeavors with philanthropy. You mentioned your mom, is a stroke victim. You've partnered with several organizations. I can't go down the entire list, but I want you to. Because people, whoever you've partnered with, because I think it's important that people get an opportunity to see that side of players. Because a lot of times things go unknown. They think athletes are just these guys that just play ball and they disappear. But you do a lot in the community, namely, I guess I could speak the whole mentoring program back in Seattle. You partner with the public school system, Phinney and May Fund. You partner with Cedars-Sinai to assist stroke patients. Any other things that you've done?
The idea is just whenever I feel compelled to do something that I've experienced, I just try to help. And so, you know, I partnered with like the Renton School District because I didn't realize that if you didn't pay your meals in elementary, it carries on to middle school, and at some point you have to pay that debt. And so I remember getting, you know, meals when I was a kid, and I'm like, I don't remember that debt following me like that. And so, you know, we found a way to relieve some of the students of that debt. But a lot of it has just come from experience. You know, I've done a lot of work with HBCUs just because I didn't know what an HBCU was until I got to college. I didn't realize what that was. And how impactful it could be, and that it's a resource. So, you know, I try to spread some light on that. So really it's just whatever I feel compelled to do that kind of speaks to me, I just go for it.
Those community works have led to you being honored with the NFL Man of the Year award through your Seattle Seahawks. To receive that honor, how does that make you feel?
I mean, I think it'll be a blessing, you know, to get the big thing. But being, you know, being acknowledged by Seahawks, I think it just speaks to some of the stuff that, you know, we've been able to do, not just myself, the team that's helped me do those things. Just being able to try to impact, like you said, impact the game off the field, just as we do on the field. So it's trying to find a way to just leave a legacy that's not just this game.
This is your second time being nominated.
My second time, yeah.
Yeah, so you were nominated for the Walter Payton Man of the Year in 2019. Mm-hmm. And now in 2023, again, obviously earning the award is a big thing, but also the name attached to it. Mm-hmm. What would it mean to you to be attached to such a great, both on and off the field, like Walter Payton?
I mean, I think it would mean the world because I think, like you said, we've talked a lot, you know, about my mom and what she's meant to me. I think the things that I remember her saying is be more than just the athlete, just and do more than just what the average person does. And I think that's kind of how I live my life. And to be able to be a part of that class, that group that's been able to be honored with this award, as well as, you know, the award itself and what it means to the league and to the people, I think it'd just be a blessing.
You are you're taking MBA classes, right?
I am.
Right, so you're taking MBA classes. You're in...
Surprised me that he knew that.
You're in my opinion, a Hall of Famer. And you continue to seem to strive for more, right? To be more than what people maybe expect you to be. And to be more than what you've already accomplished, which has already been a ton. And I could be wrong. You can tell me if I'm wrong. I think you want to be the commissioner.
That'd be dope.
Or work in some capacity.
Somewhere in some capacity like that.
What are your goals going forward?
I want to run a team someday. I think that's the biggest thing. I think I read a book a long time ago, and it was, I believe it was called The $40 Million Slave. And it was just the opening caption of the book. It was like, I believe it was Larry Johnson. He's playing in the garden. I might mess it up, but basically the story goes, he's playing in the garden and there's this fan heckling him. And, you know, they're going back and forth the whole game. Larry wins the game. I think he has like maybe 38 points, 12 rebounds, 8 assists, whatever it is. And so he goes up to the fan, he's like, yeah, take that. And the fan responds, you still a $40 million slave. And then the book kind of just talks about how, like, we're okay with just being players and making the money that we make being a player and then leaving the game versus the people that are running the teams and the people that are in charge of the decision makings and, you know, the opportunities that they get from just being in those positions are far greater than the ones that we get, but we just don't see it that way. Mm-hmm. Or we don't aspire to be that because we don't see enough people that look like us in those seats. And so I always wanted to be somebody that end up in those seats. Like I looked at Magic Johnson, you know, obviously he was a big one for me growing up and just seeing his transition from playing in the game, being great in that game, and then being as good of businessman, you know, after football or after basketball. Same thing with Jay-Z. I would even say, like, somebody that I look up to this day that hopefully I meet one day is 50 Cent, just watching his transition. So I just watched these guys and how they were known for something. They worked at something else, transitioned to that, and were even better than the next phase. And so that's what I'm trying to be, whatever that is. I believe that my role is somewhere in business.
Yeah, you got everything planned. You super damn smart. You MBA, what's that? Master's in business, mm-hmm. No?
Yeah.
You got everything planned, but every time somebody says when you gonna start playing ball, it's a mystery. You think about everything you say is planned out exactly how it's gonna go. Hey, but how long you playing? You know, I had around 15 years.
Is it planned though, or am I just doing something? Am I moving, like NBA, that's moving?
Towards a goal.
Towards a goal, yeah. But what? The thing with football though is that we know is we are not always in control of that. Like I can want to play as long as I want, but if the teams don't see it that way, then that's out of my control. What I can control is being in the best shape, continuing evolving with the game, and being ready for my opportunity. That's all I can control.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's in my control. Everything else is not in my control.
You gotta see if they keep giving you that check.
You know what I mean?
I'll tell you what's not in your control is this NFC Championship game. And, you know, I tried to say that the Rams were your rival earlier, and you pushed back on that, and you said it's probably more San Francisco.
You think about it.
Well, your rival is in the NFC Championship.
Okay.
With Brock Purdy as the quarterback.
Okay.
A great defense. You know about linebacker play. I think they have some of the best backer play in the league. Who wins it?
I'm not going for the 49ers.
I didn't say who you were going for. I said who's going to win the game, Detroit or San Francisco?
I don't want the 49ers to win. So I'm Detroit. That's what I'm shooting for is Detroit.
Hey, you
I'm big fan of Fred and Dre and all those guys. I want them to do great, but I don't want to see them in there. Just like if the Rams was in there. Like I love Sean and you know Raheem and all those guys. Ernest, AD. Like I want y'all to ball out, but I probably wouldn't want to see y'all win. To be honest,
you had it out. Y'all guys, good team this year. You know, fell a little bit short. Y'all went to Baltimore, and it was kind of like a prove it game, and. Lamar was Lamar.
Yeah.
You've been in this league for a long time and played some really good players. People truly believe he's the presumptive MVP for the second time in his career. I think mm-hmm. the first to have two by 26.
Yeah.
What makes that dude so different?
I think the biggest difference in his game is I think when he first got into the league, it was if he didn't see what he needed to see, he would take off and run. And I think the biggest evolution of his game is he's seeing the pass game so good, but still has the same agility, same speed to take off and run. And so back maybe before, you would, as soon as something didn't break in like the first couple seconds, you were okay going and trying to make the tackle. Mm-hmm. But now is if you do that too soon, he throws it right where you left, or you leave your guy, he throws it right over. Like he's looking to throw, but also understands how great a value his legs still are, and you know, it makes him very hard to stop because he's throwing a ball with great accuracy, and he still, you know, you watched the game last week. He runs, stops on a dime, and keeps running. Like you can't. That's tough.
Yeah, dude is different, man. And this has been a great show. First off, man, we appreciate you, but we ask all of our guests this: it's what's your biggest pivot? What's a moment in your life that, whenever we tell the story of Bobby Wagner and all the things that he was able to accomplish or all that he ever was, the moment that we'll point to and say, without this moment, whether negative or positive, he doesn't grow to be the man he grew to be. Oh, if you could point to that moment, what would it be?
I would say probably the first one was my junior year in college, I would say. I probably put a lot more into football. Like, I made the decision, because I was thinking about coming out just because I wanted to be able to put food on the table, and I just couldn't. You know, back in when I was playing, they weren't giving out deals like that. We was trying to survive about $400, you know. Yeah. Like, we weren't getting what SC was getting, you know, in our per diems. We was getting barely enough. And so I was tired of living like that. So I was thinking about leaving school early, but I got talked into not doing that. And I was like, okay, if I'm coming back for my senior year, then I'm literally putting everything that I have into this game. And I'm not partying, I'm not nothing, I'm not doing nothing. I'm going to focus solely on being the best football player that I could possibly be. I think that helped probably raise my interest of NFL teams. And then it was a Beyonce show that I went to. This is, y'all want to be honest.
Yeah.
I went to a Beyonce show, and I watched her perform. And I watched all the costumes that she changed, and I watched all the dances that she had, and I watched, this is maybe 2013 or something, give or take. And when I saw her perform, I walked away and I said, I'm not working hard enough at my craft. And I was just like, I need to work harder, because what she's doing is insane.
So Bobby Wagner was inspired to work harder at football by Beyonce?
For sure. Why not?
That's safe.
I'm in the beehive too, brother.
Why not?
Yes, sir.
That is safe. Real quick before we let you out, B, who do you expect to be the next coach of the Seahawks, and where do you think you'll be playing next year?
Hopefully with Seattle, but I understand this business. Obviously, I've been through it a couple times now, so I understand that. Again, that's something that's not in my control. I want it to be that, but I also understand that I'm open to playing elsewhere because I want to continue my career. So if that's not in Seattle, I would love to continue my career regardless of the situation. The next coach of Seattle, I'm not sure. I don't know. I would hope that somebody like Raheem Morris gets an opportunity.
It's a great fit.
I think there's a couple guys that I think should get opportunities, but that's the first name that comes into my mind just because I've, like, being with the Rams and watching him run the defense, and then watching him run the defense when everybody started to get hurt and we had guys, you know, not being able to be ready for games, and his ability to make those adjustments. And then you see it in this year. Like, this year you come in and, you know, everybody, you know, don't have any expectations, you know, for those guys. And that defense plays at a high level. Obviously, AD's AD, but, you know, Ernest played at a high level. There were so many different people that played at a high level, and I think a lot of that is because, you know, he knows what he's doing.
We went to Raheem's house the day of the parade when they won the Super Bowl.
And y'all interviewed him?
Yeah, and so we sat with him, right? This is when the pivot was really pivoting.
Okay.
Right? Like, we hadn't quite got a hold or an understanding of the freedom of traveling in such a manner. So his wife comes out, and she's like, you guys want water? And we was like, hell no. It's a Super Bowl celebration.
We party too.
We finna party too. So, you know, he goes back to the wine cellar, and this defensive coordinator, former head coach, wine. You know what I'm saying? This ain't Boone's farm.
Yeah.
Man, so we break the wine out. You know, here I am thinking, Bobby, it's a glass of wine. Well, yeah, it's a glass till you drink 11 of them.
Oh, wow.
So by the end
of
it,
that was a great show.
I thought it was. You see, we really had to edit it. That's when Alicia was really earning her money.
We fought.
By the end of the show, Channing didn't tackle me. I drop a glass of wine.
Oh, wow.
When I dropped the glass of wine,
red?
It was red, bro. White floor.
So white carpet?
I don't think we got the carpet.
Okay, that's cool.
Wood floor. It was wood floor.
Wood floor.
And then
white wood.
And so that's then crazy. When Channing makes me drop the wine.
Nice house.
When he makes me drop the wine, he then starts to beat me up because I dropped the wine.
Teach his ass a lesson.
Hit play.
Oh, y'all got video footage.
I turned the volume down.
Oh, wow.
We don't like posting everything, but
the funny,
there's evidence.
So before I pause the video, but the funny part of this whole video is y'all didn't even drink the wine in regular cups. Y'all just in plastic cups?
Yeah. Red cups. Solo.
Okay.
Solo Nolo.
That's cool. Respectable.
Hey,
you we know, are not Ron, bougie. Ron's like that.
I feel it.
That's why he deserved that head coaching job.
Wow.
He's going to get the best out of those guys in his natural element.
That's funny.
Element.
And, yeah, you definitely – I don't know your punching form.
That's called a drunk fight.
Okay.
That's my white girl.
Yeah, that form, we need to work on that.
You we might to, have to release the
– You need to pivot from that form.
Later.
We might have to release the audio at some point.
Later that night, funny. I was on the trampoline with Raheem's kids rolling around on the trampoline playing with the babies. It was a long day.
Yeah, that's an interesting story. I don't know if I have a story. Well, maybe I do. I don't know. Not like that, though. Not like that. Well, what's actually funny is it's like one of my favorite pictures is of me and Magic Johnson. And to this day, I don't know if he met me. I don't know. I got tickets to the Laker game, and I got it to seats from top, and I'm sitting on the floor, and I've got a bunch of people coming up to me. So this is maybe year 7-ish, give or take. So I'm thinking, oh, man, like, people know who I am. This is dope. I brought my cousin with me. And so Magic Johnson comes up, and I'm just like, yo, I gotta introduce myself. And so I go up, and I introduce myself. We say, what's up? You know, we have this small conversation. The dude catches the picture. But then I realized that everybody thought my cousin was Wiz Khalifa. And so I wasn't sure that if people were coming up to me to say hello or just... So I got this really dope picture of me shaking hands with Magic Johnson. And I don't know if he think I'm Bobby or Wiz's bodyguard. I don't know.
With the picture hold.
The picture's dope. The picture look like he's my friend. So that's... I tell people that all the time. Sure.
Yeah.
Well, until we see each other, then we exchange some business deals.
Well, Magic Johnson, here it is. You're now part owner of the Washington Commanders. Bobby Wagner would like to go back to Seattle, but if you need a future Hall of Fame linebacker and maybe business partner, just know you met him, or you may not have met him. He at least met you. And that's
100%.
The end of the pivot. 100%.
That's hard.
Appreciate you, my boy.
Appreciate you.
My dog said, where's Khalifa security?
I don't know.
Hey, Freddie T, when you dab Bobby off, you realize what current
he's
players as
shit.
Compared to...
What?
Yeah, like... Hey,
hugging the motherfucking corner of a wall.
Yeah, it felt like you holding concrete. Golly. He one of the few dudes I see knock people back flat-footed. Yeah. Like, he'll come off a block and be set.
He's a banger.
I squat, man. Like, you know what I mean?
Put the two big boxes in the middle,
I squat
man.
For a living, man.
Shit, our bodies look different, though.
Just a little bit. We're smiling, what we doing?
Let's smile, man.
Hold up. Limitless. Take a stomach cap, pinning it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling, got me up. On the mission, got me up. Knowing me, I got the key. Only vision I can trust. Trust. Limitless. Niggas send me capping in it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling, got me up.